Good morning and welcome to hour number two, Focus 580. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Frayne is at the controls. We're also happy to welcome back here to the program once again Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. He is here every once in a while. We talk about birds and birding. Over at his store, he sells bird houses and feeders and bird books and binoculars and seed, all the kinds of things that you, if you'd like to welcome birds into your yard, the kind of things for that, if you're just interested in looking at birds and learning more about birds. And he knows quite a bit about that himself. And when he's on the show, we talk about all those sorts of things, things that you can do to welcome birds into your yard if you just like to see them, questions about feeding and taking care of them, and then just more general questions about the birds that are around us. Maybe you have a bird-related question. Perhaps you've seen one and you're not sure what it is. If you can give us the best description that you can, Larry may be able to say, oh yes, I can tell you what that is, maybe tell you something more about it. You have other questions about birds, they're certainly welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. Well, thanks for being here again.
Good morning.
You said just when you came in and you sat down that just as you were getting ready to come over here, you walked out of your store, which is over in West Champaign, and you said you saw a bald eagle.
Yes, there's one
that
flying over.
That is so cool. Yeah. I would never have thought that within Champaign-Urbana that you would see one.
Right. This time of year, the bald eagles, of course, all over Illinois, especially the river systems. So they're very common to see. You never know what you're going to see when you look up is what it comes down to. And
so
I just happen to see them.
I guess that says you really should you always be looking around because, indeed, you may see something. And it's just a matter of you're looking at the right time and the right place that you could see something wonderful.
Right. Yeah. And I did have a witness. So that was good.
All right. Good. So it wasn't just, oh, yeah, Larry. Right. You saw a bald eagle. That's right. My wife and I were just talking about, just wondering generally, the other day when we had this enormous change in temperature and we had these really, really strong winds on Tuesday in the early afternoon, it was in the mid 50s. And by the time I left work, it was below freezing. And then we had, I think the peak wind gust out at the airport was 60 miles an hour, which is pretty impressive. We generally don't have winds like that. So we were wondering, well, when you have really extreme conditions like that, it was really cold and it's really windy, what do the birds do? Where do they go?
Well, one of the things that you'll see, and especially today, like this morning, and throughout the day until this snowstorm comes in, you will see birds will feed almost in a ravenous type fashion. They know, they can sense the barometric pressure's changing. They know much better than we do what's coming. And so those birds will fuel up knowing that they might have to hunker down for an extended period of time. It might be a half a day or a day or a day and a half, whatever it might be. But they understand that if they fuel up now, they can lay low. They don't have to worry about being out in the inclement weather as much. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you'll see. People this morning, if you're looking at your feeders, you're probably seeing a lot of activity. The birds are going to feed heavy until the snow gets here, knowing full well that probably late today, then of course most of tomorrow, they're probably going to be hunkered down, not doing much. And that's the type of pattern you'll definitely see at the feeders.
So where is it that they find, is it in whatever shrubbery is around?
Right. Yeah, any type of shelter, natural shelter that they're gonna hold up in. There's a few species, for example, say bluebirds, eastern bluebirds. If you've got eastern bluebirds during the wintertime that are staying around your property, they will actually go into the cavity nest boxes that they use during the summertime for nesting. But you might see 7-8 bluebirds go into a nest box during the wintertime to keep warm. So some species will do that, but it's very few and far between. Most of them are just going to hunker down into some sort of shrubbery or pine trees, evergreens, and lay low until that storm has passed.
Yeah. And do most the birds manage to make it through there? Do you lose birds at a time like that?
Right. Extreme weather like that, you do. There's a mortality rate that will increase. There's no question. Species such as house sparrows have a very high mortality rate during really cold weather and a lot of ice or snow. So you'll see those numbers will drop off a little bit during those time periods because the mortality rates can be high.
Mm. Of the birds that are, you said one of the things maybe we just talked a little bit about, what are the birds that are here in the wintertime that you're going to be likely to see this time of year? Are most of them cavity nesters?
There's a lot of cavity nesters this time of year, depending on where you live, of course. Your chickadees, your titmice, nuthatches, they're all cavity nesters. We call them the clingers, and you can categorize them with the woodpeckers to a certain degree as far as what they're doing as far as feeding habits, where you're going to see them at the feeders. A lot of nut pieces, a lot of sunflower seed works great for them. Also the suet, whether you buy stuff at the commercial level or the stuff that you can make yourself out of peanut butter even, works very well for those birds. Then, of course, we get our juncos will migrate down usually all somewhere around October is when they start showing up. We usually have them to about the last of March, first of April. They're ground feeders. You'll very rarely see them up on a feeder. They occasionally will, but it's very rare. But they love to feed on the ground. So small seeds like millets or fine cracked corn works really well for them on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Those are one of those things that you always, I guess I sort of always associate with winter, that particular bird, because that's when you're going to see them. They're very easy to recognize. They're a small bird. They're smaller than a sparrow. They're basically, their color palette is basically sort of medium gray.
Right.
And their tails flash white when they fly.
Right.
And so it's really easy to That's a very easy bird to identify.
Right, and they're very common at the feeders. They actively search out food, and usually you have a flock of them. You don't have just one or two. There's usually several of them. So, yeah, they get nicknamed the snowbirds because that's when they show up is when our snow starts to fly. So,
yeah, and probably one of the birds, another bird that everybody can identify just because of the color is the cardinal.
Right.
And that's also something that we see a lot we see them all throughout the year, but it seems that particularly at a time like this, you can see a lot of them. You can see large numbers of them, and I know that I have seen in my yard sometimes at least, you know, maybe six or eight that you could see actually all at one time.
Right. Yeah, and I've had clients had 30, 40 cardinals at a time during the winter time, but once we get into the spring, then that territorial aspect comes into play, and they start establishing their nesting territories, and they find a mate, and then you're down to one pair pretty much per yard is what it comes down to. But during the wintertime, they're not territorial. It's a survival instinct that kicks in. Flocking goes along with that. Birds learn that if there's a flock of other birds there, that they're safe for one, plus it usually means there's a positive food source. So that's why you'll see a lot of cardinals at one time.
Mm-hmm. There are, for people who feed, there are certain species that I guess they would regard as kind of as nuisance species. At least it's not that they would like them all to disappear, but you would rather not have so many. And that's where you're talking about things like starlings, sparrows, maybe grackles. Sometimes
yeah.
You see them
yeah.
in really big numbers, that they just mob the feeders. And in a day, less, they can completely clean you out. Is there anything that you can do, or what sort of things can you do to try to maybe discourage them, or, you know, do something where you're at least trying to attract some other birds and you're giving them a chance to get at what you're putting out there?
Right. There's really two distinct patterns that we see throughout the year. Starting in March, April, up through about October, November, that's when our grackle problem is the most. And that's the one that people have the biggest problem with during the spring and summertime. The grackles are aggressive, they're big, and they usually will flock a lot of times, and so you'll have a major problem with them at the feeder.
Mm-hmm.
They can be so aggressive that they will kill smaller birds at the feeder or at the bird mm-hmm. bath. So they're one of the ones that people battle constantly during the summertime. And then a real simple solution. And, of course, every solution we have with Mother Nature, there's never a definite 100% answer. But one of the best solutions for the grackle problem during the summertime is using safflower seed. Simply switch your mix or your sunflower that you're using to safflower. The cardinals do very well with it. The house finches will feed on it. Doves will still feed on it on the ground. But the grackles tend not to eat it. So it's a very positive seed to use during the summertime. And, of course, you can offer thistle in another feeding location. The grackles are not going to mess with that, but that'll take care of your goldfinches.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get this time of year, during the wintertime, the house sparrow numbers are extremely high. They flock up for protection, and they, like you say, they can enter a feeding area and wipe out the food source in no time flat, and it seems like nobody else is getting a chance to eat. And there again, you can do some adjustments as far as what type of food you put out. You want to stay away from a lot of corn possibly and try to go with the bigger, heavier seeds that are not as appealing to sparrows, such as striped sunflower seed. It's a heavier sunflower. It's still got a very good nutritional value. The cardinals still do very well with it, but the sparrows have a little harder time with it. Also, once again, safflower tends to knock down the numbers of sparrows that you might have at a giving feeding station. But one of the exceptions to the rule is when we have really cold weather and really bad weather coming in, the sparrows tend to eat anything no matter what you try to do, and they're going to show up, and that's one of the problems. Now, starlings, you can really help eliminate them. A lot of times people have the problems with the starlings on the suet cakes when they're trying to feed the woodpeckers or the other clingers. There are upside-down suet feeders that the birds can hang upside down, which a starling cannot do very well. But your woodpeckers and your chickadees and stuff have no problem manipulating their body to hang upside down and feed. So the starlings, that'll help knock their numbers down quite a bit. And we also see a lot of people tend to put bread or table scraps or anything like that outside. Anything that you put such as that, you're going to attract the starlings. Also, crows tend to be a problem this time of year where they're coming into people's yard and they don't want to see them. So if you tend to stay away from that sort of stuff, people are feeding pets outside. That's another thing that will attract a lot of starlings. So if you stay away from those type of things, you're going to be better off, definitely.
Yeah. It seems that in my yard there are certain things that I see all the time, and that then occasionally I see something else, and I'm thinking it would be great to increase the diversity of what I might be able to see. So does that a lot of that come down to putting out the right kinds of things that will attract? Say, for example, if I put out thistle, would I really be likely to see goldfinch?
Yes. Yeah, there's no question. Different types of feeders and different types of presentations, different types of foods, different locations, even the yard, are going to get you a wider variety of birds. Thistle during the wintertime a lot of times drops off. There are some people that still have a lot of finches feeding on thistle, but as a general rule, thistle feeding drops off drastically in the wintertime. One, there's not a lot of nutritional value that's going to maintain body heat in thistle seed. Goldfinches will switch over to oil sunflower seed a lot during the wintertime. Also, they can shift out of an area. They have what we call population shifts, and that population of birds in a given area might shift south a little bit depending on what the weather's doing. For example, like the suet cakes, if you've got suet cakes near deciduous trees, near the trunks of the trees, you're going to see those species like the nuthatches and the chickadees and the woodpecker species will use that more so than if, say, if you had that suet feeder hanging on a shepherd's hook out in the middle of the yard. It's not to say that they won't use it, but you'll definitely get more activity at that tree location than you will out in the middle of an open area.
Yeah. So it seems that because I live in a residential neighborhood, there are certain things that I see all the time that those birds that seem to be most adaptable to living around people, and that on rare occasions I might see something like a nuthatch, do occasionally see woodpecker. Once several years ago, just one time I saw an indigo bunting. I've seen grosbeak, seen one time, I don't know, was last year, a year before, saw in my backyard, saw a scarlet tanager, which was the most one of the most stunning things I ever saw, because the color is so intense on them. It would just about knock you over. And it's just it's wonderful to see those things, because I can count, you know, on the fingers of one hand, maybe the times that I've seen some of those birds.
Right. And this time of year, we really don't have any migration, for say, going on. We're a little too early for any of the major migrations to start. Once we get into spring, especially the month of May, that's the absolute best time to be feeding, because you're going to see such of the birds that you mentioned, the grosbeaks, the tanagers, the orioles are coming in, all the different warbler species are showing up. And not all those birds are necessarily going to feed at a feeder. There are some specialty feeders you could put out to help attract those birds, but bird baths are one of the most popular locations you're going to see them. And plus, just simply having the habitat for them, that's what's really going to attract those birds. So, yeah, this time of year, what we have, that's it. And what you see, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of difference there. This winter specifically, we've had a lot of red-breasted nuthatches come down into the area. That's a bird that from year to year might show up in massive numbers. You might not see them at all. This year happens to be a very good year for them, so they're pretty much all over the place right now. Mm. But once we get close to March, they're going to start moving back north.
Mm. Is there anything else that does seem to be around that maybe is a little bit unusual?
It's not becoming as unusual anymore, but people consistently talk about the hawks that they see. And the hawk numbers, there's no question, they're on the rise. And they're adapting more to us and more to our situations. People who are feeding birds in the backyard are going to see Cooper's hawks. That's just a simple fact of the matter anymore. A lot of people don't like them. Some people do. And there's really not much you can do about it. That hawk is going to be in that environment either way, whether you've got a feeder out or not, and he's going to be feeding on birds. That's just what they do. That's just part of nature. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the big things that we see a lot during the wintertime that people recognize them more. It's a big bird. It comes in, disrupts things, so they're very visible, very active also. So people do recognize them more, and like I say, the populations are so much higher now. You're seeing more and more of them, so people are aware of it more and more.
Yeah. That's something that I know distresses a lot of people if they feed birds, if they get the idea that there is a hawk that – the hawk obviously knows that there's available prey, and it's concentrated at a particular place, and it's going to be there at the feeder because that's where the birds are going to come. So the hawk's smart enough to figure that out, and that's the way it makes its living, you know.
Right.
That's just the way it is. And yet I think people get really distressed with the idea, particularly if they see it with a hawk killing a junco or a sparrow, you know, some kind of smaller bird. And I'm sure that they ask, well, what can I do about this? Is there anything that I can do to prevent that?
There's a couple things that you can do to help. You're not going to eliminate the problem, obviously. But keeping those feeders really close to cover is the biggest thing. The more cover that the birds have closer to the food source, the better off those birds are going to be. There's no question. If you have a hawk that all of a sudden shows up, if it permits and if you want to, you can stop feeding for about a week and a half or so. No food out there. That's going to eliminate the food source, and hopefully the hawk will move out of the territory. That works to a certain degree, but once the birds start feeding again, more likely a hawk's going to show back up. It might not even be the same hawk. It'll just be a different one looking for another territory.
Yeah.
So, but the biggest thing is having protection for those birds.
We have a caller here, and we'd certainly welcome others. You want to give us a call? You have a bird question about a particular bird that you've seen, or about birding, or about attracting birds to your yard and feeding them. And in all of that, you can certainly call and talk with our guest, Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. We have a caller over in Belgium, line number 4, right here. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You did touch a topic just then. I was talking about, I've been seeing a lot of sharp-shinned hawks around. They seem to be rather numerous this year. Of course, I have an area where I do, I really don't put out feed for them, but I provide a woodlot for a lot of birds and stuff and a lot of undergrowth and stuff. And I have seen a lot of sharp-shins this year.
Right.
Also, I've noticed, this is not unusual, but along the Vermilion and Wabash, there's a lot of eagles this year.
Yes.
Quite a few. You can go down to Newport and see a lot of them, but a lot of them are going up and down the other tributaries. Actually, I saw a very large eagle here down on the Vermilion River here just yesterday. It's a huge eagle. So there are a lot of them around. If people want to see some bald eagles, you can definitely see them down there on the Wabash. Just point that out, people. And also my favorite spot that I mentioned to Mr. Inge regularly, north of Danville what's the name of that place? It's a wildlife area on the north side of Danville on Newell Road. Heron Wildlife Area is what they call it.
Right up off the lake there?
Yes, on the north side of the lake. Excellent walking area. In the summertime, in the winter, spring and fall, it's very, very good. It might be a little chilly right now.
Yeah, it would be chilly. There's no question. Yeah, but in the springtime during migration, that boardwalk that goes out into the water there, that's one of the better locations you can be to see different species, no question.
Yes, it's very, very good. I'd like to encourage many people to use it. It has a nice, you can walk up into a tower and have a view of the area that's quite encompassing. The herons are nice, though their rookery seems to have gotten quite a bit smaller, and I think it might be just because there's so many people come by and view them. And herons they don't like people very much.
Right, yeah, they're very secretive, really, and they're not what you would call a social bird by any means.
Yeah.
And I think there's also been some wind damage on some of those trees also in that area is what somebody told me one time. So some of those nests have been taken out of circulation. But over the years, that area has been one of the best ones, definitely, for birding, no question.
Yes, it's very, very, very nice. Well, that's all I got to say.
Thank you.
Well, very much.
Thank you. Let's talk next with somebody in Mahomet. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning.
You mentioned earlier that when the weather gets bad, that the bluebirds might congregate in their cavity boxes, and I've been taking my boxes out, in the fall and putting them back in the spring. Should I be doing that?
There's a big debate about that, and what I recommend is if you're running a bluebird trail, probably 90% of your boxes you can go ahead and put them away or leave them open so you're not going to get the deer mice or anything else using them. But if you notice bluebirds around, especially if you're doing a bird bath in the yard or there's open water like a stream or a creek somewhere nearby, a lot of times around this part of the country we will see a small population of bluebirds stick around, especially if you've had success with nesting pairs during the summertime. So I would recommend to leave at least a couple boxes closed up. Monitor it. You won't have to monitor it as much as you do during the nesting season, but kind of keep an eye on it and see. And it's very common for those bluebirds to gang up in those boxes like that for warmth during the wintertime.
Okay. A couple other things. I have been having some success with my bluebird boxes and with them with laying eggs, but I've been losing a lot.
Okay.
I think the sparrows are just, I mean, they're tearing it up. But,
right.
Is there any way, to minimize that? Or
the problem with the house sparrows, and you'll see this with the bluebird and the purple martin, I've seen documentation where the house sparrow can actually kill an adult bluebird if he catches her inside on the eggs. He'll kill her and then destroy all the eggs and actually start building the nest on top of the body to court a female to come in. So they're very, very aggressive, and really the only thing that you can do is to physically trap that sparrow and get rid of him. And that is the only thing you can do. There's no compromise when it comes to nesting cavities with sparrows. And you have to be very aggressive, be on top of it. The biggest thing is try to destroy the male sparrow first, and that way he's not establishing that territory, and that's going to help your bluebirds definitely.
Okay. Well, one more question, if it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We, I believe, have a northern harrier that has been coming back mm-hmm. to the same fields and hunting and coursing and all that. Is that a normal behavior? Do they come back to the same spots every year?
Yes, they tend to, and you'll see that, and even in the springtime, a lot of birds will come back to the same territory that they either were hatched in or where they had success the year before. Those birds will realize where your harrier, he's obviously found a good hunting ground, probably a lot of voles, a lot of mice that he's finding in that area, and so he will come back to that year after year. Now, it could be a different bird. It's hard to say, but through a lot of banding operations, studies show that those birds do come back to the same territories.
Isolated. It's the same 10-acre field.
Yeah.
It really seems to be. Okay. Yep. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Right, thanks for the call. Is that a kind of a hawk?
The northern harrier? Yeah, yeah. And they come down during usually about November or so. They'll start showing up. Very easy to identify because of their flight pattern. They're usually anywhere from 2 to 6 foot off the ground. They're falling along the grass areas. And there's kind of a swooping type of a real lazy type of flight. And then all of a sudden you'll see him pull up, hover, and dive in a lot of times on a mouse or something. So very common.
All right. Very good. Next caller is in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. You might have answered my question earlier in the program, but I'm noticing in my backyard feeder a lot less activity this year, and I have a hunch it's something I've done. I've removed a privacy hedge that's gone on three sides of my yard and replaced it with a privacy fence.
Right.
And I haven't had a chance to replant yet. I'm in the process of thinking about prairie and like a little prairie patch and that type of thing. But I had bushes like Rosa Sharon as well as just that sort of ubiquitous yard urban kind of hedge that grows pretty densely, pretty fastly, and pretty quickly, I should say, around here. And even though the leaves came off of it in the late fall, you know, it's really a bushy kind of
thing. Right. It still provides, it provides protection and shelter. And, you've hit it 100% that you've removed that habitat, and that is definitely going to reduce the number of birds you're going to see. There's no question.
I'd even like to have a sparrow now or something, because I've got very little activity. I noticed activity, like, just at daylight and at dusk.
Right.
But not much during the rest of the time, no matter what the weather is going to do.
Right. And also this year we've seen a lot of different mild periods during the wintertime. And during those periods, you will not see the birds feeding at the feeders as much. You have to remember, bird feeders are a secondary source of food. Those birds are going to feed on natural foods before they come to the feeders. And so during mild weather, and, of course, everything is dead now and the seeds are very available, they're going to be out foraging on the natural stuff. But you've hit it right on the head. Loss of habitat will reduce your numbers drastically. And I'm sure once you start planting things, getting back to where you've got more habitat, you'll see a drastic change in the number of birds you'll start seeing.
Now, my front yard hasn't changed at all, and I have one of those wonderful upside-down goldfinch feeders there, and that works really well. But I've noticed a reduction in goldfinches as well, and there's a real division between my front and backyard, not just the house, but just how the land is laid out.
Right, and goldfinches, don't be alarmed if you don't have goldfinches, or very few during the wintertime. That is very, very common in East Central Illinois.
Now, are they fussy, too? Like, if that feed is old?
Yes.
I know all the answers to these. I'm just wishing that I was wrong.
Yeah. Thistle seed, that's one very common question we will get going into spring here, is that somebody bought thistle last October. Uh-huh. Is it still good? No. The answer is definitely no. Our dry humidity here will dry that seed out, and those finches will not feed on it. Thistle, you never want to store at home more than 2 to 3 months, and it should never be left out in a feeder for more than 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, so no matter what the price, maybe the incentive to buy a 10-pound bag of thistle isn't a good idea.
Exactly, yeah. Buy small quantities, use it up quickly. That's the thing we definitely recommend. Unless you're running a lot of feeders during the spring and summertime, you know you're going to blow through the seed very quickly.
Yeah.
Then buy the larger quantities, save your money, definitely. But as you get towards the end of summer, into fall, then you want to definitely start buying the small quantities, because there's a good chance you're going to throw some of that away. There's no question.
If I make it, I have a third question that's not maybe related, but
sure.
Last year I put out a suet feeder. It's a cube, and you put these cubes in there. And last year I noticed a lot of woodpecker activity, and that was great. This year I put a cake of suet out, and all I saw was gray squirrel activity.
Right.
I mean, what is the answer to this?
On the suet cakes, there is a commercial cake out there that is made with hot pepper. And your squirrels will not touch it. The birds don't have a taste sensation for hot pepper, so they'll feed on it no problem. But that will stop your squirrels from feeding and robbing your suet cakes.
Cool. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call.
Good show.
Thank you. Let's go to someone on a cell phone. This is line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question. I find birds in my yard with no heads. Different species. I've found starlings. I've found robins. I was told it might be a hawk, and I was told it also might be an owl.
What time of year?
Oh, I just found one this week.
More likely, it sounds like a cat.
A cat.
Yeah, birds of prey are going to eat the whole thing. The only thing you're going to find after a hawk or an owl's grabbed it is, the owl's pretty much going to swallow everything. The hawk is going to leave a pile of feathers, and pretty much everything else is going to be gone.
Okay, well, I don't have any cats in the neighborhood that I know of, but, I thought it was one of the birds.
Yeah, and if you, what town do you live in?
Live near Tuscola.
Tuscola, yeah. No matter where you live, you've got cats somewhere, and that's a very, very common thing. Now, if you've seen no heads on smaller bird species like sparrows or finches during the summertime, that could be grackle activity doing that also, but more than likely, I'd say it's cats.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, well, other calls are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think I've had this experience too. You can pretty much know if a smaller bird has been killed by a hawk. It sort of looks like it blew up.
Right. Right, yeah. There's just feathers.
There's just feathers.
Exactly.
That's all there is.
And you'll see And that's one of the things. That question was an excellent question, because we'll get that not only on what we found dead, on what killed it, but we can look in the nest boxes also, and we'll see if we've got bluebird eggs, for example. They're laying on the ground, but there's a puncture in the egg. Well, that's a house wren. We know that the house wren went in, jabbed the egg, pulled it out, and got rid of the egg. Or if we find the eggs that are smashed and they're starting to see nesting material being built on top of it, that's a house sparrow. So there's ways you can kind of use a little bit of information from what you're seeing to kind of figure out exactly what's occurring there in those situations. So it's helpful. He described it perfectly. And like I say, during the time of year, too, is going to tell you a lot also.
Mm-hmm. Our guest this morning on this part of Focus 580 is Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. If you have questions about birds and birding, or feeding them, or attracting them to your yard, or perhaps, again, you just have seen a particular bird and you're not quite sure what it is, if you can give us a description, Larry, chances are he can tell you what it is. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. This caller right here is in Champaign, and it's line one.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a statement about starlings. It seems like the university gets in and kills them all off just when I get to know the group in my backyard. Everybody seems to think that starlings are a problem bird and not very interesting, but I was lucky enough to have some live in my dryer vent one year, and I found that they were very attentive parents and very fascinating mimics. They did a cell phone, they did a cat purr, they did the dryer vent click, and they did the sound of the dryer itself. I was wondering why people have so much against such an interesting, intelligent bird.
Everything you said is correct. They are very good mimics. They are very attentive parents. They're very prolific nesters. The biggest problem is with the European starlings and the house sparrow is that they are not a native bird. And when they were imported into the North American continent, they've caused major problems with the native species.
It's outcompeting the native.
Exactly. Yep. They're a cavity nesting bird. They outcompete woodpeckers, bluebirds, purple martins. Exactly. Yeah. And you got to be careful, too, around households. Like you say, with a dryer vent, they can nest in certain areas where they've caused house fires. So you have to be very careful, because you might think that nest is right there at the edge where the vent is. That nest probably goes back in there 2 to 4 feet all the way back. They'll fill that whole cavity up with nesting material.
Okay, and then I had a second question about crows.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have moved more and more into the city in the past few years. You can actually watch them on the lawns, and before they were more of an outer edge type of bird. But I had a question. They seem to be in groups of threes, probably a parent and an older child. How do they determine which one of them stands guard on the telephone pole?
That is a seniority issue. Right. There's a social order within crows, and you will have guards or lookouts that you will see. You'll have your scavengers. There's a lot of research that has been done on it. There's a lot of very good books out there on the market that talk about that. And everybody plays their own role. For example, the sentry, if he's on the lookout and he misses something, there's almost a reprimand that you will see. The crows will go after him because he missed a predator, for example, getting in too close to them. And so, yeah, they are an extremely fascinating bird.
Is that usually a single male that's a sentry?
I could not tell you exactly which sex that is. I have no idea.
But have you noticed that they are moving, it seems, more into the town limits themselves?
They're very opportunistic birds. They're very intelligent birds. They know there's food here. You talk to people who live in Danville area, and they'll tell you the birds have always been there in town. So, yeah, it's something that crow numbers were hurt quite a bit with the West Nile that came through several years ago. I think you're seeing the populations rebounding very nicely now, and so you're starting to see more and more of them. I think they're just becoming more visible is what it is.
Okay, and then I had just a real quick third comment. We have old trees in our backyard that have a lot of hollows, and between the squirrels and the birds, they're so well used, we hate to take them down.
Right.
Do you find that in cities there are not enough warm nesting holes for the songbirds?
You're exactly right. Yeah, that's why a lot of those cavity nesting birds' numbers are decreasing, because anytime we see a dead limb or a dead tree, it gets cut down.
Especially in the city. They're very
right.
good about taking them out just when they get useful.
Exactly, yeah.
Is there something you can put up in their stead?
Nesting boxes is the best thing. There's nesting boxes for all the different woodpecker species, chickadees, titmice, nuthatches. They will all use a nesting box.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
But I'm assuming that placement of the boxes is critical. And for different species, you got to think about different heights off the ground,
right.
They've got to be in different places, and maybe some of those, it can't be too close to your house. They're not going to like that either.
Right, yeah. And the biggest thing, like we talked earlier, why nobody likes the starlings is then you're going to have species competition. So people who live in Champaign Urbana put up a flicker house up in the tree. I can almost guarantee you, probably 95% sure, that you're going to have problems with starlings. The hole's big enough for the starling to get into. It's a very good cavity for them to fill up with nesting material, and they're attracted to it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have that battle right off the bat. That's why putting a bluebird house up in the middle of Urbana is not going to work. You're never going to see a bluebird. You will always see house sparrows using that box because of the competition. So location is key. Exactly where you're at geographically is very key. And then also, like you say, placement of the house in certain areas, certain locations for that particular species, what's going to work best.
Yeah. Do you think that we are going to be seeing more examples of birds that tend to be more rural, maybe slightly more open country birds, because habitat is shrinking, that we will see more of those birds to the extent that they can, adapting to living in more urban kind of environments?
Yeah.
But certainly we've seen it with raptors.
Right. Yeah, with raptors last year, 2 years ago, with the wild turkeys are starting to show up. And people need to get used to that because they're going to become very prolific. And you're going to see turkeys in rural or in more urban settings because we are moving out further. Farming practices are still continuously, there's a lot more reduction in habitat. So you're seeing that. And not in all locations, but in a lot of locations. And so, yes, these birds, they will adapt. There's no question. It's either adapt or they're going to die off. It's going to be one or the other. And so what you see is an adaptation. Canada geese, for example. I mean, you look back in the 40s, they considered the giant Canada geese extinct. And now that's all we have. And all summer long, all winter long, that's all we have around here. So anywhere there's water, you have geese on them. So, yeah, birds are adapting. There's no question. Some species better than others. And like you say, the raptors, that's one of the big ones that everybody sees, especially in the wintertime.
Yeah. All right. On to another caller here. We will talk next with someone on line number 2, and I believe it's someone on cell phone. Hello.
Hello, this
yes.
is Aunt Ron from Rural White East.
Yes.
Hey, you're talking about changing in habitat for the birds and how they survive it. I think the cowbirds are really interesting, and every time I see one of those at my feeders, I just kind of cringe. Could you tell us more about that?
The cowbirds are that. Yes, that is one species that has adapted to the change in the environment, especially in the state of Illinois. There's been a lot of studies done through the University of Illinois on that particular species. The lack of deep forested areas has allowed the cowbirds to just explode in population because they are a parasitic nester. They will lay their egg in other birds' nests, say, for example, one of the warbler species. That female, she will find where that nest is at, lay an egg. That egg will generally hatch sooner than the host eggs. That chick will back the other eggs out of the nest, actually, and that warbler will end up raising that chick to its adulthood or to its fledgling stage, and she will take care of it like it's one of her own. So, yes, you're exactly right. Cowbird numbers have exploded, and that is simply because of the lack of habitat.
Hey, I also have a towhee that's been coming to my feeder, and I know if we have a cold winter, of course, it might not make it, but what do you think, you know, how often do we see birds like that come around the feed that you don't normally see in the winter?
You have the towhee right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's unusual. They're usually further south.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's been here about for about 2 weeks now, and every time I see it, it's like, oh, is it going to make it?
Right. Yeah, and see, once we get into January and February, when we get those warm spells and we get some really high south winds, we might see those really early migrants will pop up here. Now, survivability, it's just going to depend on that particular bird. If he's got food and a water source and shelter, then that's definitely going to help him.
Yeah, right at my house.
Yep, exactly.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call. Let's keep on here, and we'll talk next with someone on line number 3 right here. Hello.
Yes, I wanted to let people know about a program that the Champaign County Audubon has coming up this next week where they get a chance to see some live hawks and owls. People from the Illinois Raptor Center are going to be at Brookins Gym at Thursday, February 7th, from 7 to 8. And they're bringing along, that's in the evening, a hawk, an owl, a falcon, a turkey vulture, and an eagle. And they will be talking a bit about them and having them fly out over the audience.
Wow. Okay. So, again, this is next Thursday.
Right. The 7th.
The 7th at Brookins.
Mm-hmm.
And what time is that going
to be? 7 to 8 p.m.
7 to 8 p.m. Well, that'd be a great opportunity for people who have never seen birds like that, particularly if you've never seen them up close.
Right, yeah. And they put on a great show, that organization does. And if people have an opportunity to go out, I'd definitely recommend to see that.
And it is free.
Great. Well, thanks for letting us know.
Okay.
We appreciate that. That's I think just again, it's really cool to have the opportunity to actually to see some of those birds up close. One of the things I guess you don't really appreciate, can't quite appreciate until you get pretty close, is how big how big some of these birds are.
Right.
An eagle is a really big bird.
It is.
It's just sitting there with its wings, I'm not just talking about wings, but if it's just sitting there with calmly with its wings folded, it's a really big bird. And a turkey vulture is an even bigger bird.
Right,
it's a huge bird.
It is. And it's funny, too, when people are describing a bird, and that's one of the key items you'll ask, what size was it? You get a very wide range. Some people overestimate drastically, and other people will underestimate on what it is. So it makes it's very interesting if when people are looking at sizes of birds to identify something, keep a visual mind and say a real common bird like a robin. You know what the size is. Was it bigger than a robin, smaller than a robin? So, yeah, size is different. And like you say, at a distance when you're trying to ID something, being up close to it, it is really different to see those birds, especially the big guys.
Yeah. So it's really a great opportunity. So people should see if they can check that out. Well, we will continue here, and we'll talk next with someone on the campus, someone on line one. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
I've kind of given up the battle with the sparrows, and I have quite a colony near my house. But last summer I put up a second bird house and a wren came in, which is what I was hoping for. And I was wondering how I could maintain the wren and keep the sparrows from taking over that box as well. Is there anything I could do about that?
Yeah, that's a very easy fix. The hole size is what determines who's going to get in there. Now, you have to remember a wren can go into a 1-inch or 1 1/8-inch.
Okay.
House sparrow cannot get past a 1 1/8 or 1-inch house.
Okay.
The 1 1/8, he can get his head in a little bit, but he will not get his shoulders in.
Okay.
And so if you already have an existing house, there are portals that you can buy that screw right onto the house that will reduce that size of the hole to the appropriate size.
Okay.
So, yeah, be very careful when you're buying wren houses. And the other thing with wren houses, too, is make sure you have multiple houses up in the yard. You want them in different locations, a front yard, backyard. At least have two. Three or four is even better. You're offering more places, more locations for that male to court a female into, and you're going to better your odds.
Okay.
And then the house wrens will nest two or three times during the summertime, and they will bounce from one house to the next. They won't always use the same house.
Okay.
But, yeah, just keep the hole size at the appropriate size, and you shouldn't have any problem.
And my trees are mostly evergreens.
Okay.
Is that all right? Do they go in there? Or?
Yeah, if you can have the wren houses should get some sunlight on them. So you can even put a shepherd's hook next to the tree and put the wren house on that, and they will come up to it. Wrens will also come right up to your house. If you have a wren house attached to your house somewhere or on a fence or something, they'll use it there also.
Yeah, I'm always in my last place I lived, I'm always finding them in places I didn't want them.
Right, yep, exactly. Yeah, they'll nest just about anywhere.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. We have maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated. And if you have bird questions, you give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I see wrens around our yard, and I'm always happy to see them, and have put up a couple of houses, and they have nobody's ever actually lived in them. They've stuffed stuff
right
in them,
right,
but nobody has ever lived in one.
Yeah, the male will come into the territory first, and then he builds what we call dummy nest, and the female will usually end up coming in. He'll court her, show her where the nest locations are at, and she pretty much picks where it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they choose yours or not, you know, that's where the numbers game comes into play. The more houses you have up, the more opportunity you're going to have one that's going to be successful.
Yeah, and they do seem that they don't they're not so shy that they won't come up around the house. I know I've seen them on my back deck. I've seen them on my front porch. They seem to. In fact, we are in the habit in the summer times of buying a fern in a pot, hanging it on the front porch, And they seemed to like that. In fact, one year, it was a cold night. The fern hadn't died yet. So my wife decides, well, let's bring the fern into the house. Well, she did, but she also brought a bird that was in there.
Yep.
And our cat got very excited.
Yes.
Fortunately, we managed to get the bird out of the house. The cat didn't get at the bird. Everybody was okay, but it was far too much excitement. It was quite the thing.
Yeah, hanging plants like that, you're going to attract house wrens and Carolina wrens, or house finches also will nest in them very readily. So during the spring and summertime. Yeah.
One thing that we haven't talked about, and I know we've talked about in past programs, is that if you're interested in attracting birds to your yard, in addition to putting out seed, it's also very helpful, particularly in the wintertime, to put out a water source. If
right.
there's water, you will end up attracting birds. Of course, the only issue is that you've got to do something to make sure that it doesn't freeze.
Right, yeah. And I tell people this constantly, that heated bird baths, you will get more activity at that bird bath in the wintertime than you will probably in the summertime. The heaters, commercial heaters that plug in, run an extension cord out to it, an outdoor extension cord, plug it in, put it in there. Those heaters will usually kick on about 36, 38 degrees. So they're not, the thermostat controlled ones are not running all the time, so it saves a lot of energy. But they're useful, they work great, and the results are incredible. Like I say, you'll see a lot of different bird species at water that you will never see at a bird feeder. So that's why it's so important to have that out.
Yeah. And other, just generally, if you're going to feed during the wintertime, what could you say about particular, you said some things a little bit earlier about if you'd like to particularly, say, discourage, try to keep down the numbers of things like your house sparrows, that you would suggest you feed particular kinds of things. Are there specific kinds of seeds that you would recommend, particularly for this time of year?
Right. I like the safflower. It's still a very high-energy seed. The cardinals do extremely well with it. Then I like some of the millets or the canary seeds, rape seeds, or thistles on the ground for the juncos that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then some sort of a suet presentation for the woodpeckers and the clingers. And preferably the upside-down suet feeders. That's what's going to work best for you, because then it's going to keep the starlings out of there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. One of the things I know is somebody asked me about I thought maybe I'd ask you, is about blue jays. I think also you talked earlier about the fact that crows were certainly affected by West Nile. Blue jays were too.
Right.
And there was a time of several years ago where I think our blue jay numbers were really down. It seems that they've started to come back some, or at least I know that now in the summertime it's more likely that if I'm outside, I'll hear them, because you can tell
right.
a blue jay when you hear it. It's pretty easy to identify. And then, of course, if you see them, they're big, sort of dramatic-looking birds. Nothing else looks like that.
Yeah, and blue jays get a lot of bad rap. Sometimes people don't like to see them at the feeders, but it's one of our more colorful birds, very intelligent bird. They've done a lot of studies on blue jays, and they've learned that they're very nomadic. They move around a lot.
Yeah.
So I get asked a lot, well, I had 6 or 7 blue jays for 5 or 6 months, and now they're gone. I don't see a single one. And that's common. It happens a lot. And like you said, the West Nile did kill a lot of those blue jays, but I think the numbers are starting to show back up a little bit better now. And since the West Nile is in the environment, things that have survived it are probably going to be okay. We're not seeing the kill-offs like we were. Blue jays are easy to attract. Peanuts. They love peanuts. They'll eat sunflower. They'll eat corn. But if you put peanuts either in the shell or out of the shell, it works great. And
really?
If it's in the shell, you'll actually see a blue jay. He'll land up on a platform where you've got a handful of peanuts. He'll pick up several peanuts at a time and weigh them, basically. And whichever is the fullest or has the heaviest amount to it, he'll take that one first, which you know, thinks it's intelligent, but then he comes back and grabs the next one anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you do, though, to make sure your squirrels don't end up eating all your peanuts?
Well, that's a whole other show.
Yeah. That's a whole nother show. You couldn't give us a minute on how to deal with squirrels?
Yeah, squirrels are a nightmare. Everything that is out there that supposedly works, there's always a case where it doesn't work. So baffles, putting the presentation of your feeders in areas where the squirrels can't get to it, that's typically the single best thing to do, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else that's really noteworthy in birding these days, do you think?
The raptors are the big one. I think that's the biggest single one. So we had a couple of callers talking about the bald eagles. I think that's one of the neatest things during January, February that people can go see. You can go to the Wabash region, Cayuga, Newport area. You can go over to Pekin, Peoria area along the Illinois River area. Clinton Lake still has open water year-round, and there are bald eagles there also. So that's one of the neater ones that you can do during the wintertime. Mm. And it's not a very far trip from the Champaign-Urbana area.
And as far as the hawks are concerned, you think that that's just something that we're gonna is going to be more a feature of the urban environment? We're just going to be seeing more of them?
Yeah, and it's to the point, too, where they're nesting inside the urban areas also during the spring and summertime. So having them year-round is not uncommon anymore either.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. Every once in a while, he stops by here. We talk about birds and birding and bird feeding and associated issues.